Welcome everybody to session three of our practice building course. We're glad to have you all here. It's some interesting things being posted on the blog. We'll talk more about that later on, and I hope that you all have had some interesting thing happening in your practice building efforts as we all work together to make RSM viable in the world. We got a lot of great stuff to get to tonight, and I promise another action-packed call full of lots of good stuff. First off, I want to get into the homework that we had laid out for this particular week, or the last month. There were three things to do. One was to amp up your daily action strategy. The second one was to keep looking at how you're talking about Rubenfeld. And three was to come up and work with your partner on a great description of your practice. So I'd like to first hear from y'all about what you've been doing. We'll get into the homework in a second, but just generally, how's it going? Who's had some successes? I know there's been some successes posted on the blog. I'm curious, you know, how's your practice going? How are the practice building efforts happening? What's happening?
Well, David, it's Bev. I had an interesting thing happen the day after the last phone conversation, you know, the phone meeting.
Right.
And I don't know who it was that shared the story about meeting somebody in a grocery shopping line and saying quickly what she, you know, she felt was possible for this person who seemed to need help. But the one line that she said was, "I have an appointment available tomorrow at 5:30. And I found myself in a situation where I got a phone call from someone who was in trauma from the death of a relative. And I found those words coming out of my mouth. "I have an appointment available for you tomorrow at 5:30. I don't know that I would have said that, but it was so fresh in my mind and it was so immediate. And I saw her for four sessions. And I'm going to do a closing session with her in about 2 weeks. So we did a crisis intervention based on what she needed, but I got to it really quick."
That's great.
Yeah, that surprised me.
That's terrific, and that was really smart, you know, knowing what to say when someone says that I have an appointment available. You didn't say, "Gee, would you like me to tell you all about Rubenfeld?"
No, no. That wasn't, you know, she had been referred by someone. They must have had a conversation about Rubenfeld and about the services that I offered. And so that wasn't the time and place. It was just she was in crisis, and I was able to see her immediately.
Right, but there's a key thing there that I think people should remember. You'll all cringe because this is a sales thing, but in sales, frequently salespeople have been accused of talking past the close. And what that means is the person's ready to buy, and the salesman keeps explaining more and telling how wonderful their product is and going into lots and lots of details. And oftentimes that can talk somebody out of doing what you want them to do. So you were very savvy and got that this is a person who already was interested, and you went to for the close and said, "I've got an appointment available," and got it done. Good for you.
Thank you, Dave. It was great.
Nice job. Who else has a story to share?
Well, I have a story to share, but I don't I don't have a particularly good ending for it. I did, you know, one of the flyers. I put up my flyers at many places. I live not far from a big shopping center, and I got a call yesterday from a gentleman who said they would like to schedule an appointment to see me and leaves a phone number. And the phone number just, you know, it was a little bit like a clipped voice because he must have been calling from his cell.
Right.
And I tried it so many different ways, you know, it was a couple of the numbers and could not find him. You know, I kept getting that recording from the phone company that you should recheck this number. It's not in service. So, you know, I felt so good when I first got that, you know, call. But it just didn't work out. So I'm hoping that he will call again, and perhaps if I'm not there, I'll leave a message, and it'll be clearer than it was because I just could not, you know, return the call.
It's too bad.
But it felt good that, you know, this flyer of all places in King Cullen, a supermarket where they have this community board, and it's been up there for a while, and I was saying, oh, my goodness, haven't gotten a call, and suddenly I did get this call. So I'm still hoping on this situation. Maybe he will call again, and it'll be clearer.
Well, it's a good. At least you know that the flyers are, someone's paying attention, and
yes,
that was a good sign. And you know, unfortunately, the number didn't make. But that's great. You know, at least
mm-hmm.
at least you're getting a response. Who else
right.
has a story? There's at least 30 people in this call who've all had great stuff happen. I want to hear about it. Who else? Don't be shy. I'm a nice guy.
Well, I had the manifestation process in that I've been trying to visualize new clients coming to me, and I got a referral from a present client who I had some doubts about his commitment to therapy, so I was very pleased that he referred someone to me, and in the course of talking with this new person, I developed what I think is going to be an effective way of speaking about Rubenfeld for myself, because I spoke of positive touch, and that I use positive touch with, particularly with men, which is the specialty that I'm developing, is working with men, and he responded to it, and I said, you know, when was the last time you were touched by something? And that opened him up, and we had a very fruitful session coming from talking about touch and being touched and what touches you or where is touch missing in your life.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds like a lovely metaphor and a very full, you could go in a very full way toward men's work.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a nice way to put it, and were you pleased with the response?
Yes.
Very good.
It served to take someone who was very hyper and just have them sink in.
Very good. Like it. Who else has a story?
Well, this is Judy. I have a story not about expanding my practice, but about funneling people. There are two people from Taiwan who for the last couple of years have had a session with me when they come to the States, which is once every summer. They're university professors.
Right.
And so they've had a session with me a couple of times. They're very excited about it. This time they had a session with me, and I could give them Joe and Noelle's information about the new training, and I think they might do it.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. So they'll be coming from Taiwan, possibly, or doing the webinars and everything, and then coming for... if they can manage it on the summer, come for face-to-face.
Excellent. By the way, I had a chance to see one of the last days of the Santa Fe training, to see the people going through this new format of training. And when I was visiting with Noelle and Tony, who were leading that in-person part of the thing, they were blown away at what great shape people were in just in the first week of the training and how the webinars and everything else had done such a nice job getting them prepared. So Joe and Noelle are both very enthusiastic about how solid this training is and what a difference it's making for people. So that's just an FYI for everybody.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Good. So anyway, I'm happy to do my part.
Excellent. Well, that's great. That's helping make RSM viable in the world and expanding it overseas too. Who else has a story?
I have two stories, and the first one is that, interestingly enough, when you ask us to do about wording, there's a directory that I needed to write up some things for this month at the same time. It's going to be a yearly directory here in the city where I live. And there are several sections of listing categories that I was in. So with my partner on this project here, we went through a lot of different ways of wording, so I came down with three or four short ways of shortening what I do for these directory listings, and we're going to see after the directory is published, you know, which one people may have responded better to. So there's one that came out as my favorite that I think was really nice. But it was wonderful to have the universe provide the opportunity to need the wording right away. So that was very practical, and I feel good about where I got, and having the partner to help me was just invaluable. So I wanted to present that. As we were also working, an idea came up, and you can tell us, David, what whether Goldsmith is going to do anything about this, but I ended up being somewhere with someone who does a lot of work with healing energies, but had been told me that the government had approached this big healing conference about touch, that they were going after websites now, depending on what people say, and if they aren't licensed ministers in certain states. This was the federal government is going to be looking at a lot of things. And I know that, you know, what she and I were talking about, my partner, was that here we are creating all these great words, but if we go out on, and I need a website, so that's part of what my focus is on, trying to create one. And then it turns out that, you know, because of the legality issues around touch, and here we are doing this wording and getting everything great and doing all these success stories, but is Goldsmith going to help us address some of the legal issues was the question that my partner and I came up with.
Yeah, we won't. I'm not going to get into this call now, but
I understand
that if you have specific factual information about what happened at this conference, please forward it on to Joan, and she'll get it on to me, and helping INARS and everybody else in terms of staying abreast of legal issues and things like that is something we're very concerned about. And any info you've got, send it on, and we'll dig into it.
Thank you.
Sure.
I'd like to add something to that about
Doris,
the
is it
touch?
About the legality stuff?
Well, it's about Alana Rubenfeld herself and how she told us, because I took the course.
I don't want to get into that right now.
Okay.
I want to keep it focused on practice building. Otherwise,
we
easily get spun off into a whole other direction, so I apologize for cutting you off.
Are you on the call, Rosemary?
No, Rosemary's not
on
the call.
I'm on the call with the Goldsmith people. Want me to call you later?
Okay, let's continue here. So I want to move into a little bit of report on. You're on. You're talking to us, not on mute, by the way. Let's talk about the homework part. One of the things we asked you to do is to amp up your daily actions, and I'd like to hear from a couple of you as to how you did that and what's happened.
Here it's Bev again. I did a couple of things. I did a flyer, which also helped me with the elevator speech, you know, with controlling the amount of words.
Yep.
And I reproduced it. I loved the way it looked. And I put together a package, and I was at Rutgers University for a week recertifying for my license for drug and alcohol. And I found myself giving out the flyer and the brochure, the original ones that Rubenfeld, INARS, I think, produced for us a while ago, and talking about Rubenfeld. And I think there were six people that might be interested in exploring it either for their own personal growth or the training. So, you know, that was great. I wonder if anybody will call me for a session, but I found someone said to me, boy, you're really marketing great. You're a good marketer. And I had a laugh, you know, because that's not exactly how I see myself.
Yeah, that's great.
You know, but that's how that whole week went. So that moved me forward.
I have something to share about the, you know, revving up the energy and the that strategy.
Daily actions. Yep, good.
Yeah. Because of the summertime here, I joined a town pool, and I go several times a week, and I made up my mind that every single time I go to the pool, I'm going to give at least one brochure or card to a person that I'm going to meet, and it's going to be a new person. And I found ways of doing that, of like being in the pool, walking, in the pool and going up to a person that looks, you know, like might be open to something, and starting out a conversation maybe about the water or about the weather or something, and then going further with it until finally, you know, I tell them what I was doing and that I could help them or a relative, you know, and so forth. And I found that I met a psychotherapist that way, and she came back the next day. She saw me in the pool, and she ran over to me, and she said, I gave your card to someone, and hopefully they'll call you, and this kind of thing. So it was feeling very positive that I'm doing that. I did yesterday give two brochures out to two different people. And I noticed that sometimes, like, the person doesn't seem interested for themselves, but for another person, and
yep.
they'll say, oh, I'll give it to my friend, or I'll give it to my relative. And so I've started to say that myself now, that, you know, it's for you or for a friend or relative.
Very
and that
good.
Seems good, you know.
Yeah. Keep suggesting to people how to do the things you're asking. That's great. Keep ramping that up. Who else has got an example of amping up their daily activities?
This is Charlotte. I have one. In addition to making myself speak about RSM every day to at least someone, I've built a list of referral sources and have now put together a letter with a brochure and a card to a short list of folks that have the potential for lots of referrals and people that I, you know very well. One's a psychotherapist who's on the faculty of the Gestalt Institute here. One's pastor of a large congregation. Another's a parish nurse. Another's a massage studio owner. But I really tailored a letter to them specifically, and with the advice of my partner, Mary Beth, included, you know, examples of the types of situations that would be good referrals to me, and included in the letter an offer of a complimentary session, but certainly an intention to get together for lunch or coffee just to share the fact that I'm expanding my practice. And so I
Brilliant.
Kept the initial mailing to, you know, five or six people who know and trust me, but who could be very strategic in helping me both design my practice and send me clients.
That's great. We're going to talk more today about referral sources and how to take care of them and work with them. So I'm going to reserve the rest of my comments for that section, which we'll get into shortly. But that's great work, and that's a great report. Who else has a story or a report of how they've upped their daily actions? Okay, going once, going twice, going three times. Okay, the next thing we wanted you to do was to work on how you talk about Rubenfeld in the world and describe your practice. And I'd like to hear from a few of you in terms of what you came to. Now, here's the question. If you can't talk on this call, how are you going to be talking about Rubenfeld with people that want to hire you?
Well, this is Bill Miller, and I run a group for men, and I've been kind of training those men on how to talk about Rubenfeld, because they are the big source of my clients is still referrals. And in that process, it sharpened my own way of talking about that, and it had me revise a letter that I created to send to practitioners in case, because most of the practitioners are women, and I think that they have women clients, and I was thinking that they might not know of anyone who was comfortable in working with men, and so that's what I've been doing.
Very nice. Who else has something to say about how they've been talking about Rubenfeld? Has anyone come up with a great way to talk about it in their elevator speech or when people ask what you do? Has anyone really happy with a phrasing that seems to work and gets people's attention?
David, it's Bev again. I started talking about it as a creative conversation for health and well-being.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, you know, I found like two paragraphs that I'm working on trying to remember. It's kind of hard for me to remember this, but I'm working on it. I basically want them to know that your body knows you, and it's the home for your thoughts, feelings, and spirit, and it's the container for your life story. It registers and records your life experiences in its cells. And I say that stressful experiences and repressed emotions can show up in your body as aches, pains, tension, fatigue, and that's how your body alerts you. That's your body alerts you in this way. And then invite them to have a creative conversation about health and wellness. And see if that gets anyone's attention.
Very good. And let me just share a couple comments that I think will be apropos related to that. I've been reading through the comments on the blog, and so far everybody's been posting their comments on the very first blog post. And just a reminder that we'll talk more about this again at the end, but I'm encouraging you all to make blog posts, which is a new topic that you want to talk about, which could be a cool new way that you're talking about Rubenfeld. And then there's a chance for you all, and many have done it on the first post, to comment on that blog post. So, and the comments in that first blog post have gone a lot of different directions. One of the ones that I saw there was a theme about that I think is relevant to what we're talking about here is a concern that people come for one session and then they don't seem to want to come back. And there's a couple of things that are simple and more challenging about that I'll mention. One is I make it a practice when I'm working with people to always schedule the next session when I'm finishing up the first one. So I always get that scheduled right before they leave my office, and that makes an enormous difference. Now, not everybody is going to be ready to, or they don't have their calendar, or they're not sure they want to, but my general MO is when I'm done, when should we get together next? And that gets it on the calendar, and sometimes it'll raise issues. And if they say, well, I'm not really sure, I don't want to, then you can dig into it and get more to my second point. The other thing we talked about on the first or second session is if I'm coming and having a session with you and I have some really interesting insights and some interesting experiences, but it doesn't fundamentally change how I conduct my life or address something that I'm very concerned about that is in that Maslow hierarchy of needs we've talked about before, it comes across as a nice experience, but not one worth repeating if I have to pay money for it. So one of the things that I think is essential is in working with clients and they come up with interesting insights or whatever else, and it's a nice session, is helping them towards the end of the session crystallizing it in terms of why it matters in their life that they had this experience with you, what you released, how that's going to make a difference, but so that they can help catalyze it and understand why what they had was valuable and what they can look forward to in session 2, 3, 4, and 5. And if you don't help them do that, you'll get trapped into their saying, oh, wow, I saw God, it was amazing, I discovered this or that or whatever their experiences, but if it's just a nice experience and not a profound life-altering experience, and not that every session has to be that way, but you've got to help them see how it's on the path to where they're going. Otherwise, it feels like a luxury that they may say, you know, maybe I don't need this. And so that's a part of what you've got to do is help connecting what they experience and uncover with why it would be useful to keep doing more of it. Anybody have any questions about that?
You said it very well, I must say.
Well, I find the thing that I do is often in a first session, I will say something. I will set it up and say that you have an opportunity to really be understood, and that if you, at the end of the session, if you feel understood, then we've moved life forward a little bit. So at the end of the session, I will often ask, did you feel understood? Did I get how you really felt? and that seems to work. They want to come back and be understood a second time.
Yeah, you're very smart about that, Bill. One of the things why coaching is so successful is people have a chance to be heard and known, and they don't often experience that in their lives. And as a therapist or a Rubenfeld synergist, you can create that experience for people that's very valuable and very potent. But I'll say it again at the risk of repeating myself. Don't mistake someone's interesting insights with, I got world-altering value that's worth paying for. Now, oftentimes what you're doing with people is going to take some time over a number of sessions. So when someone comes to you and you figure out what they want to work on, it also helps for you to show them how the arc of your work together might take two or three sessions to fully release or get into whatever thing you're working on and explain how that is so that they can have a context for why they need to come and see you again and again, or at least a few more sessions beyond just one. Beyond just one becomes an interesting insight, but so what? Now, some people say, I like this profound experience. I'm going to come back every 6 months just to get a tune-up. That's a different experience. But again, you have to be in service of something that matters to them and something that's worth paying for. Any other comments on what you've come to in terms of how you're talking about Rubenfeld?
Well, I have a comment on what you just said. And
sure.
It sounds very facile when you say it. I think it's much harder to do, and that I've lost what I wanted to say. I'm sorry.
It's okay. It is easy for me to say, and it's an art for you to do as part of a session.
As part of my first orientation session with a client, person that comes in, I hate to say consumer, but they are a consumer of my services.
Yep.
And what I say to them often is, I don't believe it to be possible or helpful just for one session. And I remember going back to the practice clients training when we were encouraged to make 4 to 8 sessions. And so what I've encouraged people to do is make a commitment for four 1 hour sessions, and then on the fourth or the fifth session to evaluate what experience they have had and why they came to begin with, and what was the outcome as a result of their participating with me in Rubenfeld Synergy for 4 or 5 sessions, and give them the option at that point to determine whether they would like to continue or they've had enough. And it's been more likely than not they say, I'll continue for a while, and we schedule.
That's very smart. That's a great – what you're doing is you're contextualizing the experience and saying in order to get the most value for your money, you need to do the whole course, not just the first chapter.
Yeah, whatever it is that you're here to present with didn't happen overnight. There's no – to have an expectation that, you know, your situation, your issues will be identified or solved overnight. It's just, I wouldn't say this to the client, but it's not realistic. So I offer them that 4 to 5 sessions and then tell them that make them feel as though they're directing me, they have control. And at the fifth session, we can do the assessment to see what if anything, has changed or what their experience was. And when they think about it, something's happened.
I want to also mention I have a client that came to me for 2 years with all kinds of problems, relationship problems, if she should marry someone particular and so forth. And after the 2 years were about up, she said to me one day, you know, you helped me so much, and I'm thrilled to say now I'm getting married, and I probably don't, you know, need your help anymore. However, she said, because it so relaxes me, I'd like to come and just be quiet and not talk to you, and you can just give me the body work alone. To me, that'll be like a kind of meditation, and I'd love to come once or, you know, every other week that way, because I have a, you know, a job that does take a lot out of me. So that's really worked very well.
Yep,
and I always keep reminding her of how, you know, she gets off the table. She says, can I stay the night? Oh, I'm so relaxed. And so it's another thought for you that if you ever reach a point with a client like that, you know, where they say they're ready to end, that solved all their problems, they might want to still come for that relaxation part.
Very nice. Mm. Very good. We've got to move on to our next topic, so we'll have to, if you have any other questions or thoughts about this, the blog is a great place to put them. I'll just highlight one other comment I saw from the blog. We talked about it last time, and someone mentioned it as well. Describing yourself as a synergist is very intriguing, and it gets people, what do you mean you're a synergist? And dropping the Rubenfeld thing, it becomes less words, and it's been working for a few of you, and I recommend you keep trying that as well. What I want to focus on tonight is our new piece of content is referral sources, specifically how to use them, how to find more of them, and how to take care of them so they keep feeding your practice. So I want to start out with, just as a way to open your eyes, go around and have you just say the kind of person that is a referrer for you. Could be a lawyer, accountant, therapist, psychotherapist, whatever. And if someone said it, don't say it again. But let's just get as many different kinds of referrers that you, this group is already using out on the table so you can all hear the other possibilities that you may not have thought about. So let's begin.
Massage.
Friend.
Massage therapist. Good. The next one.
Friends.
Friends. Good.
Professional coaches.
Professional coaches. Good. Doris, you were going to say?
Yeah, psychotherapist, another psychotherapist.
Good.
People in transition.
Okay. Who else?
Landmark graduates.
I heard landmark graduates and somebody else was talking at the same time. And what were you saying?
Networking group.
Pilates groups, networking groups. Good. Who else?
Pastors.
Pastors. Great. Else?
Chiropractors.
Chiropractors, nice.
Students.
Students, good. Who else?
Esthetician.
Esthetician, very good.
What's an esthetician?
Someone who does nails and facials.
Oh.
And hear a lot of stories from a lot of women.
Very good. Hairdressers
could
be in that category. Other psychotherapists, good. Who else?
Spiritual directors.
Spiritual directors, nice. What else?
Medical doctors.
Nurses.
Medical doctors, nurses, great. Acupuncturists. What else?
Homeopathic.
Homeopathic, good. And somebody else was saying?
Business women who are in high stress, you know, high performance situations.
Good, referring each other, very nice. Couple more. Mental health counselors. What'd you say?
Toastmasters.
Toastmasters, very good. Mm-hmm. And one more.
Dentists.
Dentists, okay, very good. So you can see there's a range of folks who are interacting with other people and hearing what's going on, who if they know what you're up to, may be in a position to say, gee, you ought to go see Doris or Bill or Beverly or Carolyn or whoever.
Oh, I got just another idea to tell you, and I just did this today, actually. I went into an office of a dermatologist, and this is what I tend to do. Every time I go to a doctor's office of any kind of doctor, I found that they often say to me, no, you can't put your brochures or your cards out, because I've asked that so many times, you know, on their counters, because they have,
right,
you know, things there, brochures and so on. They say, no, no, because then we'd have to have everybody say yes to everyone. So what I do now is I say, I'd like you to share this with the other people that are working here, you know, for the doctor. And
mm-hmm.
like the dermatologist had about six people on staff. So I gave them, you know, six brochures, And they said, oh, good, you know, thank you. I don't know. But I tend to do that whenever I go into a doctor's office. I say, share that among you.
Very good. So the thing about referral sources, and you may have all experienced this, is some of them are really great and some of them are not so great. And you've all heard the 80-20 rule, you know, 80% of your, and what that means in this case is 80% of your referrals are going to come from 20% of your referral sources. And if we really charted it, my guess is it's probably more like a 90-10 rule. So what this means is you've got to be on the hunt for more and more referral sources. But more importantly, when you find one that regularly refers to you, those need to go on your VIP referrer list, because those are the people who will outproduce all the rest of your referrers, and you need to take really good care of them. But just like you're always looking for clients, you also want to always be looking for referrers, because the more people out there who are aware of what you do and what you can do for other people, and when you find those people who, you know, many times, you know, these people who are connectors are always putting the right people together with the right things, good networkers, those are the people you want to make sure really know what you can do for people. So it's not enough that they know that you're a Rubenfeld synergist, because they may not know what that means. But what they need to know is the results you produce with your clients and the kinds of people that you work with, so that when they're running into those people and hearing stories or situations, you want their name to pop into their brain and say, you know, I think you ought to work with Bill. Bill has worked with a number of people like that, and I think he can really help you. And if you notice, when people come to your practice who have been referred to you, they are much readier to join your practice without a lot of discussion, because someone they know and trust has already said, this is the person who's going to solve your problem. So they already come in with a great deal of trust and affinity for you. So it's really important that your referring sources know what you do for people and the kind of people you do it for and the results you produce. The other thing that's critical about referral sources is they're going to forget you. So you have to keep them fresh in their mind without calling them every day and annoying them. You don't want to call them every day and say, by the way, who are you going to refer me to? That doesn't really work. But you want to stay in touch on a regular enough basis every month or two, and in particular, in a way that's natural for you to connect with them, that is of service. And there's two ways to do that. One is you're referring people to them, whoever been referring people to you. That shows up as a huge service. And two, helping them understand what you've done lately. So when you're connecting with somebody, maybe you're taking a referral source out to lunch, and your lunch conversation is going along the ways, you know, I'm glad we had a chance to get out to lunch. You've really been helpful to my practice. You referred, you know, six people over the last year, and, you know, I can see that you really know what I'm up to. I want you to know some of the cool things that have been happening with some of my clients. And that's a chance for you to tell some stories to people who already like you about the kinds of things that you do for people, because it'll expand their awareness further as to the difference you're making for their clients and other people they can refer to you. So you want to stay current with them and stay in touch with them and have them remember you in a helpful way. Many people take their referral sources for granted, and they don't know how to feed them and care for them and nurture them so that they'll keep referring. Now, here's the other interesting thing. Most of the people who are potent referrers want very little back from you. It's an odd situation. The ones that don't refer so much want more. The ones that refer a lot refer because they are natural connectors. They're natural networkers. They like helping people. They like solving problems. And there's two things they really want from you that are essential. One, they want to be thanked and acknowledged. Not with money, not with big gifts, thanked and acknowledged. And two, they want to know that you're doing great work for them so that they didn't refer somebody who's going to be mad at them. So the two most important things to do for a referring source are to thank them and do great work with their clients. Does that make sense so far?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And most people do a crappy job at everything I've just said. They don't take care of their referral sources enough. They don't thank them routinely and regularly. And they forget the trust that's been put in them and the need to make sure they do a spectacular job and to follow up with them if it doesn't go incredibly well. Now, one of the things we talked about early on, and I'll get back to it, is there's confidentiality issues that you all have to deal with. So I just want to reiterate something I said in, I think, the first class or at some other point in time. Someone said, well, I can't really talk about a client to one of my referring sources, and that's true. But if you know that Sally is in your office because Bill referred her, it's perfectly okay for you to say to Sally, is it okay with you for me to thank Bill for referring me to your practice and let him know you're doing really well? It's pretty hard for Sally to say no to that, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're not asking him, you're not asking Sally to reveal everything you heard in the session. You're just saying, I'd like to thank Bill because it's really been great working with you, and I want to make sure he knows how much I appreciate it. Is that okay? And they'll say, sure. And by doing that, you not only have permission to thank Bill, but you have now also subtly explained that you build your practice by referrals. So you now also, in that same conversation, have the ability to say to her, and Sally, by the way, just like Bill did, if there's anybody you see who you think would benefit from the work we've been doing together, I'd hope you feel good enough about our work together that you'd refer them as well. And they'll say something like, no, you're a schmuck. I don't want to deal with you ever again. Or they'll say, yeah, I'd love to be able to do that. And then you can say, would you like some brochures or some business cards or whatever your thing is to pass out, you know, when it's appropriate? And they'll either say yes or no. And then you can leave it at that. But by thanking Bill, or getting permission to thank Bill, you've also encouraged them to refer to you as well in a way that will seem completely natural and practical. And one of the things you'll discover if you start looking at people who have successful practices versus people that don't, is they have a lot of these behaviors that have become systematized, natural, and just part of what they do. They have a process for having patients come into their practice that they deal with that sets up future referrals, sets up value, has them be a regular client. They have things they do at the end of a session to encapsulate the value, get the next session scheduled. They have ways of thanking the client, thanking the referral source, that all become a very organic part of what they're doing. But much like you know from your training, when you're cradling somebody in a certain way, it isn't just to accomplish one thing. It's usually accomplishing two or three different things. And if you think about your practice building efforts and your practice work is all working together, you'll start discovering the things you do are helping solve multiple issues. They're creating a better long-term client. They're creating a reason for them to send other people to you. They're creating ways for you to thank the referral source, et cetera. One of the most potent daily actions you can have is working with your referral sources, being in touch with them. One of the things you want to do is keep a log for your referral sources. Write down when you last contacted them so that once a week you can go through and say, who haven't I been in touch with for a while? And make a point that a month doesn't go by that you don't create an occasion to run into them, talk to them, send them a note, send them a card. Keep yourself present in their brain. It's a very conscious, purposeful act that makes an enormous difference. So I've been yakking now for about 15 minutes, so what questions do you have about this referral stuff we've been talking about?
What if a referral source is actually a client? Not somebody that's outside of your practice, but someone that's inside your practice.
Sounds perfect. What? I'm not sure I understand the question.
Well, I wouldn't be calling them and taking them to lunch. You know, and I wouldn't be calling them, you know, on a monthly basis. You know, I mean, I'm having contact with them. So,
well, when you see them in your practice, it's a chance for you on the way out the door to say, by the way, you know, I want to thank you because you referred Sally, Jim, and Bob, and I want you to know they're doing really, really great.
Yeah. Okay.
But it's some people make this mistake of, oh, I can't talk about the referrals when they're in there seeing me. No, it's a natural conversation. You don't
maybe
do it in the
for
middle
you
of
it's a natural. I don't think it's always a natural conversation, and I've got some clients who might think that I was being manipulative, and there's some clients that wouldn't do that. And I had an uncomfortable situation where a client of mine complimented me that how did I turn this guy around that his girlfriend was living with him and they're about to get engaged when I knew they'd just broken up.
Oh, boy.
Okay, but that's a place where you can't clarify that because you have a confidentiality issue. But that's not a referral situation.
But even if I would be hesitant to acknowledge too much to a client referral, especially when that they have a stake in seeing the work go one way, and it doesn't always go that way.
Right. In that particular case, you don't want to say anything because you do it by doing so is going to violate confidentiality. So you've got to be artful about what you say and when. But at the end of a session, when everything's all wrapped up or before a session, you've got a couple clients that are going well that you have permission to talk about, you might want to just say, by the way, thanks again for referring Sally to me. She's doing really well.
I guess, you know what it is?
Yeah, tell me.
For me, at the end of the session, it's a very quiet time for them to leave, and for me to bring up referrals at that point is taking my experience away from them. And
okay,
good.
Then maybe you should do it maybe at the beginning. When they're walking into your office before you get started, you can say, just by the way, I want to let you know. And you're not going to do it every session that you see them.
Yeah.
But it's – and. You know, and it may not, and there may be some clients where it doesn't fit into what they do. They may come in a certain state, and you don't want to interrupt that. So, but there may be others that are very chatty.
This is Deborah. I'm
just
thinking that in the same way that you might want to ask permission from somebody to thank a referral for a referral, you might want to ask the new person if it's okay to thank the person who referred them because. Somebody might have the referral but not want that person to know that. In other words, I don't ever reveal the confidentiality of even who's seeing me, even if they're referred.
Mm-hmm.
So I would want to ask permission first before I thank the client who had the referral. Let me put it that way.
Yeah, and permission.
I think that's another way to do it. And if it's okay with the new client to say to the client who referred them, thank you for referring them, but I wouldn't want to reveal whether or not that person had come because that's their choice to be revealed or not.
Absolutely. No, and that's why that's why I was saying before, you've got to always ask the client, may I thank Joe who referred you for being in my practice? And sometimes they'll say yes and sometimes no, and then without that permission, I would not say a word.
Right, and then I think not to say anything about how the sessions are going, but just to
exactly.
To give thanks.
Yep.
You know, because that's just, it's just, really sacred. That confidentiality is really sacred.
I understand. I agree.
So if it's okay to thank them, I think that's as far as you go.
Perfect.
Yeah.
I agree.
Yep. Good catch.
Yeah.
And
yep.
I think that's a good tweak.
I have a question. You said you know it's time for questions about referrals. And over the years, I've had clients that have come and left the practice. Sometimes it could have been 3 sessions. Sometimes it's been like a couple of years and so on. And I have, of course, a list of these past clients, and I have never thought of calling them up and using them as a referral. Or it's delicate to say, do you want to return to my practice? I don't know what to do about that. But I have phone numbers and names, and what do you suggest?
Well, with those folks, what I would do if they've been in your practice before and as far as you know, they left on good terms, a phone call just checking in with them saying, hi, it's Doris calling. And we haven't seen each other in a few years. I just want to see how you're doing.
Okay, so that would be the way to do it, just checking in and how are you doing, rather than saying, you know, do you have anyone that you can refer me to because you know how I work or something like that.
No, that's too crass and you'll never comfortably do it. So you want to start out with, how you doing? And the conversation will go, I'm doing fine, what do you want? And then it's I'm just checking in with you and I'm, you know, I just make a point of checking with my past clients from time to time and I hope you continue to do well. I look forward to seeing you again sometime. And if they get more chatty, you can say, by the way, I've gotten more training or done this other thing or, you know, something new about your practice to share.
Sure.
And if they say, gee, are you still at the same place because I want to refer somebody, you can say, yes. Would you like me to mail you a flyer?
Right.
But you have to kind of take the conversation where it goes. But it has to be a natural conversation that you would have with people. It can't be forced and it can't be weird.
Yeah. Right.
One of the questions that I have is how to get some of these professional sources that people were talking about. If I'm not going to a specific chiropractor or naturopath or somebody, how is there a way to do a nice cold call kind of thing or to send something out to people? How do you find some of the other professionals who might like? You know, would be likely to refer to someone for Rubenfeld?
That's a good question, and it takes some art. You want to be introduced to them by somebody else. It's hard to cold call somebody, but as an example, if there's a health fair in your area where there's people to talk to, it's a good place to go and introduce yourself.
Okay.
Other referral sources, you know, are there chiropractors or therapists that you think I should talk to who should know about what I'm doing? But working cold and just calling people, you will find unpleasant and you won't do it for very long. So in those cases, you want to look for other people to refer you or places where you can naturally meet them.
Okay.
We have time for one more question about referral sources, then we got to wrap things up for today.
This is Deborah. I don't have a question. I just wanted to comment on what Doris was saying, that I have a friend who's a therapist who does groups, and she does a kind of a little newsletter blog for anybody who's on her email list, which might be professionals, referral sources, and maybe some of the people in her groups. So she sends out a monthly update on her practice and what she's doing and her latest groups and something about something that's current to people's lives. She does a regular email connecting with all of her contacts, including her referral sources. And I'm sure, you know, clients as well are on her email list with their permission. So it's just another way for people to stay in touch and for you to keep updating them on what you're doing in your practice.
Excellent. Very good. Erica, I know we've talked some about the blog. Is there anything else you want to point out to folks about the blog before we wrap up?
Well, first of all, I'd like people to understand that putting a comment down is not as big a deal as writing a blog. So you just go there and write a comment, but look for the most current blog because some people responded to my last email, but they commented on the previous blog. And the blogs have been keeping up with what's going on in this class.
Do people understand what that means?
I think we'll send another email out to explain to folks who don't have time.
URL, you click on it, and you look for where it says comment, which is all the way at the bottom of the article or the post.
This is Deborah. I just want to say I'm really glad that people are posting comments and that people will get more savvy with this as we go along. But I just wanted to really affirm the fact that people are participating because it's what we want.
Thank you.
Yep,
thank you.
And I'm also encouraging people to just do it no matter how you feel about it because that's how you get comfortable doing it.
Exactly.
And this is a closed
group.
Thank you
for the hand-holding.
Yep. So I want to wrap things up with your homework for next week. I've got two things. One, some of you have pointed out in the blogs that you have a great partner, you really love them, but they're not kicking your ass. So if you have one of those relationships, invite your partner to kick your ass and or find a second partner so you can keep working with the one you love, but get someone who's going to kick your ass and keep you moving. So look at your partner relationship and make sure they're as strong and as supportive, in my definition, not your I love you, you're so great, you're so wonderful, I won't hold you to account for anything kind of way. So make sure your partner relationships are strong and vital. We're going to be talking about those next week. And the second thing is make a list of all of your referral sources, then rank them in order of who's the most important to you, and figure out how you can double your referral sources between now and our next session, and make sure that your key referral sources you have been in contact regularly with, and if you haven't, make a point of doing that before we get together next. So that's our work for the day.
Okay.
Yep.
Could you just repeat that last thing you said, that your key referral sources that you keep in contact with them? Is that what you said?
Make sure that you've been in contact with them recently.
Okay.
And if not, make a point to do that before we get together next.
Okay.
And the homework will go out in a note, a reminder note to everybody. And, Mark, let's get that note out in the next few days, not 2 weeks from now.
Absolutely. And Dave has been talking about next week, but we're going to meet actually
next
in
session.
Next session.
Yep.
When is next session, the date?
We'll send that date out with the homework reminder. And don't forget. Can access the recording of this call on the website as well.
Very good. So that's all we've got time for today. Thank you very much for all your active participation. I love the stories and direction you guys are heading. Keep building your practice. Keep making RSM viable in the world. Until next time.